I've listened to Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue for years.
And I listened to it once yesterday.
Welcome to Spin It. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spin It, the record-ranking podcast for people who are feeling good and would rather be listening to music. I'm James, and with me is Connor.
That's me.
That's right, and this week we're talking about Dr. Feelgood. We're going back into the world of heavy metal, hair metal, a place we've ventured sometimes, but still kind of seldomly, I think.
Not as often.
No. We've touched on, you know, Kiss and some Bon Jovi and some, you know, little things here and there. But I don't think we've touched on anything quite like Motley Crue.
Probably not.
Now, do you know any of the big hits? Any of the classic Motley Crue songs? Right, surely like Home Sweet Home.
Yeah, of course. I know Motley Crue. What's wrong with you?
That's what I'm asking. That's all. Nothing wrong with asking.
I don't like your insinuation.
Well, what Motley Crue do you know?
I don't like that tone.
I'm just saying, by answering the question, you ruin my power to insinuate.
I know all the classics. Kickstart My Heart,
uh-huh.
Girls, Girls, Girls.
Yeah.
Home Sweet Home. I mean, who doesn't know that one?
Everybody knows Home Sweet Home. And everybody who's ever tried to learn how to play the piano learned how to play Home Sweet Home briefly.
Oh.
There was someone we knew that went in to play the piano once and they learned Home Sweet Home, but that was like all they knew. And so for a long, long time, all the time, we heard that opening riff on the piano to Home Sweet Home. What's your opinion then on Motley Crue? If you know the hits, do you know any of the deep cuts, I guess?
Well, that would kind of be given away.
That's kind of why we're here. I mean, I guess you can't tell me all the things.
I mean, what's the point of listening to the episode if everybody knows my opinions on it from the first 5 minutes?
Okay, fine, fair enough. Okay, well, how about this then? Of these 10 tracks on Dr. Feelgood, how many of them are classics that you knew?
Too many to count.
Well, I mean, the maximum answer here is 10.
Yeah, it's too many.
Sure.
I don't have the scrolls with me.
I'm going to gamble and say.
I'm also now realizing.
Uh-oh.
I listened to the deluxe edition.
You listened? Oh my gosh, the whole thing?
I mean, it's only 16 tracks instead of 10, but yeah.
Well, it's true. On the deluxe edition, 4 of them are demos.
Yeah.
So how did you not realize that you were hearing the same songs again, though? You did this way back on the Nirvana episode, too.
I did, and I thought it was a weird choice.
It's strange that they decided to do this.
I was like, why are there demos on this? I don't know how I missed that it was on the deluxe version. I just thought it was a weird choice to include demos of the tracks you already did.
Yeah, it would be.
I'm a fool.
That's okay. We're all fools from time to time. That just means you got more Motley Crue.
So if we're doing the deluxe edition, to answer your question, the answer would be 9.
9 songs on the deluxe edition. Wow.
Yeah.
So if you subtract, then the math gets all wonky with the demos. I'm guessing you knew 3 of the 4 included demos. And so that means you probably knew 6 of the 10 tracks, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay, good.
You figured out the math.
I reverse engineered it.
Oh, you see, that's my problem. I only know how to engineer. I don't know how to reverse engineer.
You only know how to engineer forward?
I didn't get a reverse engineering degree. I only got an engineering degree.
Well, I didn't either, but it worked out. How much do you know about Motley Crue? How motley is the crew, do you think, if you had to guess?
What does that mean?
Well, crew is a noun meaning a group of people, and motley is an adjective.
Yeah, but that doesn't tell me you want to know how much I know about them.
No. No, but I just wanted to know if you had a guess at how motley they are.
Oh, pretty motley, I would assume.
They must be, I guess.
They're no Twisted Sister. I don't go clubbing with them.
No, and it's good that you don't go clubbing with them, to be honest. After listening to this album a couple times, I really don't think you could hang.
Whoa, what are you trying to say?
You don't seem to live a lifestyle that is super in line with Motley Crue.
You saying a man who can eat 50 nugs in one sitting can't hang with the crew?
I don't know if that's exactly the criteria they look for, but yeah, you could probably hang with them in nugget eating.
Probably beat them.
Maybe. Let's talk about Motley Crue. Let's learn how Motley the Crue truly is.
Heck yeah.
Once upon a time, come with me on this fairy tale.
Oh, okay.
Once upon a time, there's a little band called Sweet 19. Greg Leon is their lead singer and their guitarist. Tommy Lee is their drummer. One day in early 1981, Tommy Lee and Greg Leon decided they didn't want to be in Sweet 19 anymore, and so they set out on a quest to form a brand new band of their own. In the process of forming a new band, obviously they were still friends, hanging out and going to shows together. One of those shows was for a little band called London, where they were blown away by the performance of bassist Nikki Sixx, spelled with two K's and two X's. If you don't know who Nikki Sixx is,
spelled exactly how it sounds.
Honestly, in this case, yes. He's kind of a legend of hair metal, really.
He's the hairiest of all the metals.
Maybe. But in their own words, when they saw Nikki Sixx, they said, wow, we are gung-ho about him. We're just all gung-ho about Nikki Sixx. They thought he really had the look and the swagger down, but they found out, upon closer inspection, that he was awful at playing the bass. Like, really bad. He was so bad that Greg Leon said, okay, I won't stand for this. I'm leaving. I'm leaving the band. Enough. So Tommy Lee and Nikki Sixx were like, okay, bye. Like, don't let the door hit you. And they put out an ad for a loud, rude, and aggressive guitar player. Because, you know, any guitar that's loud and rude and aggressive enough can cover up the worst of bass playing sins. They brought on Bob Deal, probably more commonly known to you Motley Crue fans as Mick Mars, as a replacement lead guitarist. They said, great, you know, now we have drums, we have bass, and we have a guitar, but we still need a singer. Turns out, Tommy Lee remembered somebody who could sing. His friend from high school, a guy by the name of Vince Neil. It took him a couple of asks to get him on board. They had to come back and come back. But sure enough, sooner or later, he caved. The main lineup of Motley Crue was born, and they had their first gig on April 1st, 1981. And that's no April Fool's joke. It is impressive that they managed to put together a whole band half from scratch in a matter of months. But actually, you know, they didn't have a name at the time, and they were kicking around some absolutely terrible ideas. Nikki Sixx wanted to call the band Christmas. They said, no, we shouldn't name the band Christmas.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Christmas.
I know.
I mean, hey, think about all the hits you'd get around the holidays.
Yeah, every song is a Christmas song.
It's awesome.
It would have been really something. But the band, you know, they just like, do you know in Frosty the Snowman where the kids suggest they name him Oatmeal and everyone goes, huh? And then they just move on.
To be fair, I kind of identified with Oatmeal Kid.
It kind of was like that in my head. You know, Nikki Sixx is like, what if we're Christmas? And everyone went, okay. And then they said, no, we are a motley crew of guys. We're the motleyest crew of guys. What if we just called ourselves a Motley Crue? But that wasn't cool enough, just to call themselves Motley Crue. So they added umlauts to the O and to the U, allegedly because of the German beer that they all like to drink, called Löwenbräu, which had umlauts over the O and the A. So they're named after themselves and a beer.
They're beer selves.
Yeah, they're beer selves. Oh, that's a good slogan. Be yourself.
Beer yourself.
Be yourself. Be yourself.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's all right.
It's a little silly.
It's silly, but what if you put umlauts over it?
Oh, well then, you know, award-winning commercial right there.
Isn't it? I know. That's ours. You got to pay us for that idea, Budweiser, if you want it. Löwenbräu can have it for free.
We could have a real bidding war over this one, because any beer could use that slogan. So, you know, let the bidding war commence, beers. You know how to contact us.
It's true. How do you feel about the umlauts, by the way?
I kind of forgot they existed.
Really? I mean, that's fair. They don't affect much.
Until I started doing some research on them, and then I was like, oh, yeah.
It makes it really difficult to type their name properly. That's what I learned. Some fonts don't even have graphics for characters with umlauts.
Oh, no.
Yeah, learned that one the hard way, but we got through it. Anyway, the band connected with manager Alan Kaufman through friends of friends of friends. Very, very distant connection. Mm. And he helped them set up their own record label with outsourced distribution. So that gave them a lot of creative freedom and it let them put out their self-made debut record Too Fast for Love in November of 1981. Less than a year from conception to record. And honestly, it did great. It sold over 20,000 copies and sent them on a tour of Canada, of all places. They got really big up north, I guess.
Nice.
After that, the initial success earned them a deal with Elektra Records. And Elektra Records remixed and remastered and then re-released Too Fast for Love the next year. They were also kind of the epitome of the sex, drugs, rock and roll lifestyle, especially the drugs part. They were real party animals. So I'm not saying that you couldn't eat 50 nuggets and hang with them. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like you're seen.
I see. You're saying I'm too cool for them, not the other way around.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I accept that.
They maybe would be intimidated by you.
I mean, who wouldn't be by somebody who slams back 50 nugs?
Yes.
It's an intimidating sight.
It is. I'm sure their party animal nature left plenty of facts out there for the mixtaper to find when we get there to Factor Spin. I think he could say some wild things about Motley Crue that I'd almost have to believe, right? I don't want to give him ideas again, but...
Like what?
I don't know. Just parties can lead to stories.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But Motley Crue headlined some big festivals after that, and their second record, Shout at the Devil, was their United States breakout record. They opened for acts like Ozzy Osbourne, and they got a ton of exposure in the next couple years with a massively growing fan base. In 1985, their third record, Theater of Pain, came out, which is the one that features, of course, one of their biggest songs, Home Sweet Home, and it moved them kind of in more of a glam metal direction. The band, though, was still really, really heavily using drugs and alcohol, and they called Theater of Pain a creative disappointment.
Oof.
Yeah, but I guess that's, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard sometimes. People are overly critical of their own work, but I get it, I guess. Their fourth album, Girls, 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 peaked at number 2 on the Billboard charts, and the band maintains, and they're probably right, that it would have gone to number 1 if Whitney Houston hadn't been the one standing in their way.
We can even blame her, though.
No, she'll always love them.
Yeah. It's like, it's Whitney Houston. Get out of her way. Don't stand behind her. You're blocking her shadow.
You're blocking her shadow?
Yeah.
That's intense. But then, in 1987, Nikki Sixx died. Not like died in a permanent kind of way, but he actually did die. He was being rushed to the hospital after a heroin overdose, and he was declared clinically dead for 2 minutes. They gave him 2 different shots of adrenaline, which woke him up, and the whole experience is what helped inspire their iconic song, Kickstart My Heart. I hadn't ever considered that it was so literal.
Well, now you have.
Now I have, now I know, and I think it's so cool. It makes me like the song even more. But that incident, I mean, as scary as it was, it did spur the band onto a path of sobriety. And the song made its debut as a part of their 5th studio album, the one we're talking about right now, Dr. Feelgood. When they were making Dr. Feelgood, Motley Crue really did intensely work to rehabilitate and break their addictions, which is really, really cool. Obviously, those themes are kind of woven into the themes of Dr. Feelgood, right into the title character himself. But unlike their old records that they ended up not liking very much, all their creative disappointments, since they were able to work on Dr. Feelgood sober, they ended up thinking the final product was a lot better.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Apparently, though, Dr. Feelgood was a mess to record. Word on the street is that they used to fight and bicker so much that their producer had to put a stop to it. And to do that, he brought in the band members one at a time to record their parts so that they wouldn't fight in the studio.
Wild.
I know. And it doesn't show. I mean, to listen to the album, it doesn't sound like they were recorded at one at a time, which, of course, is the whole point.
Let's say if it did, I feel like it's not a very good produced album.
No. No, but that's really interesting. That's not often that that has to happen. I mean, we talked about Kings of Leon getting into fist fights, and this sounds like that to the extreme. Or like the Monkees always causing mischief, you know?
Yeah.
Dr. Feelgood finally got released in August of 1989, and it's definitely about as glam metal as we've gone maybe ever, I think. I think it surpasses Twisted Sister and Kiss and all the rest. Definitely feels a little heavier. I don't know. It was the first and only Motley Crue album to top the Billboard charts. Whitney Houston got out of their way for this one. And it stayed on the charts for 114 weeks. 2 years. It's gone 6 times platinum today. Critics and fans also loved it. Rolling Stone gave Dr. Feelgood more than 4 stars. AllMusic and the Los Angeles Times gave it nearly 5 stars as well. And it was supported by 5 singles, 5 of the songs that probably most of you know from this album, including the title track, Kickstart My Heart, Without You, Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away, and Same Old Situation. Kickstart My Heart and Dr. Feelgood were actually nominated for Grammys 2 years in a row, both of them, but they lost each time.
Sad.
Really sad, right? And also interestingly, the entire album, except for the opener, Terror in Tinseltown, has been released as DLC for Rock Band games. So you could Rock Band your way through almost all of Dr. Feelgood.
Wow.
I know how much you love the Guitar Hero and Rock Band franchises.
Oh, hang on. Big fan of Guitar Hero. All right.
Okay. Rock Band is Guitar Hero with drums.
Yeah. And singing.
Sure.
Anyway, we had Rock Band growing up for the Wii, but it wasn't the same.
No. Did you play a lot of Motley Crue on Rock Band.
Which one was it on?
Probably various ones. Dr. Feelgood is playable in Rock Band 1, 2, and 3 and Rock Band Blitz. Kickstart My Heart is playable in 1, 2, 3 and Blitz. Rattlesnake Shake is playable in 1, 2, 3 and Blitz. So I'm guessing 1, 2, 3 and Blitz are most of them.
Fair enough.
Yeah. After Dr. Feelgood, Motley Crue went on a massive world tour and put out a compilation album celebrating their first decade of decadence.
Whoa.
But they got pretty burnt out after that. And in 1992, Vince Neil decided to leave the band because glam metal, he felt like, was kind of on the way out. Grunge was on the rise. People aren't quite sure whether Vince Neil was fired or he quit. But either way, it doesn't seem like he necessarily went away mad. He just went away. And that's not a joke. I mean, it was kind of a you're fired, you can't fire me, I quit situation, I think. I don't know. It was hard to tell. And I don't know if we know definitively. But Vince Neil left. Their subsequent album with replacement vocalist John Corabi was kind of a flop. It hit number 7 on the Billboard charts, but fans really missed Vince Neil, and the album kind of underperformed expectations. But luckily, after 2 solo albums in the meantime, Neil did agree to rejoin the band in 1997, and in 1998, their contract with Elektra actually expired, which meant they not only had full control over their future direction, but they regained their rights to the publishing and the masters of all their songs. Allegedly, they accomplished this by just being a massive pain in the butt until Elektra relented. Because that's not a normal thing. Record labels like to hold on to their masters, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But Motley Crue, ooh, they came at them until they got those masters for themselves. It led to a second crack at their own record label, like they tried back in the 80s, appropriately called Motley Records. No umlauts, as far as I know. The band kind of went in and out and off and on hiatus for a while in the early 2000s, before they had a proper reunion in late 2004. Also, I love this fact, they hosted a Motley cruise in 2008, like on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Cool. I've never been on one of those band cruises, but like, I always wondered how that works. Like, they're obviously the focal point of the cruise. Is the rest of the cruise Motley Crue themed? Are they, like, around that you can hang out with them? Do they just do a show? Like, obviously, everyone wants to hang out with them. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. The band officially retired from touring in 2015, and they maintained that they were, quote, completely done until 2018, when suddenly they released new songs to coincide with their new biography called The Dirt. And then, of course, in 2019, they magically found a loophole in the contract that they signed when they agreed to collectively end touring that let them tour again. Which, why sign a contract if you're gonna... Anyway, I don't know. I don't know the legality behind all of it, but that just struck me as interesting. But with that tour came an end, officially, to studio albums. But will they find a way around that too? Who knows? I don't know what the contracts say.
Another loophole.
No doubt. Either way, they have already been on tons of tours, more than 33 tours, and they put out 9 studio albums and 8 compilation albums to go with them. Like, okay.
Nuts.
That's almost 1 compilation album for every album. How many different times and ways can you splice your singles together?
Apparently infinite.
But hey, you know what? If it's making money, yeah. If you had an infinite number of monkeys in an infinite number of crews, a lot of them would be Motley. As for awards the band has won, in 1991, Dr. Feelgood won them a Favorite Heavy Metal Album American Music Award. In total, over their career, they've earned 3 Grammy nominations, but they've never won. And in 1990, Kickstart My Heart was nominated for an MTV Video Music Award for Best Heavy Metal Video. Motley Crue got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 2006, and MTV ranked them the 10th greatest heavy metal band of all time. VH1 put them at number 9, so they're in the elite ranks of heavy metal and hair metal. In 2014, there was actually a country tribute album to Motley Crue, where a bunch of country music stars like Rascal Flatts and Darius Rucker covered Motley Crue songs, which is weird. I didn't know about that, but that's so strange. And it must have been pretty good, because it debuted at number 5 on the Billboard 200, higher than most of actual Motley Crue's albums ever did. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Oof.
Maybe we should listen to the country Motley Crue compilation and see how that goes.
Apparently we should.
Maybe it'll score higher. That'd be embarrassing. Anyway, that's all I've got about Motley Crue. Now it's time to bring the motleyest member of our crew in here and play some Factor Spin, where the mixtaper is going to lie straight to my face, presumably, at least 1 time, maybe 4, and tell me some facts about Motley Crue that I have to figure out.
Maybe none.
Maybe none. It could be none. But really, the mixtaper hasn't done an all-fact week since the Journey episode. since 110. It's been almost 30 episodes without an All Fact Week so far.
Wow.
I know.
Well, let's get him on out here. See what he's got.
Let's see what he's got. Oh, Mixtaper.
Hey, it's me, the Motleyest Crew in the Spinnet fandom.
Are you a Motley Crew? You're just one guy.
I got a crew. I got my own crew. I got the Mixtaper crew.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. Who's in the Mixtaper crew?
Me.
That's just you. You're the Mixtaper crew. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, there's only one Mixtaper.
That's true.
Crew one.
Yeah, there is no minimum number for a crew, right?
There's an easy way to check that. A crew is a group of people who work closely together.
Oh, a group. Yeah, so one's out.
Well, hang on. We got to look up the definition of a group. Oh, a group is a number of people or things that are located close together. It doesn't say it has to be multiple. It just says a number. So one is a number. I can have a group of one.
I guess you could have a group of one,
which means I can have a crew of one. See, that's why you gotta go multiple definitions deep when you're checking these things.
I guess, but are you really super incongruous? I don't know. Are you Motley?
No, so I'm a Mixtaper crew.
Oh, so you're not a Motley crew. You're just a Mixtaper crew.
Yeah. I came in saying I was a Motley crew, but that's only because you called me one. I'm more of a Mixtaper crew.
Okay. Oh, historically, Motley is the particolored costume of a jester.
Oh.
In that definition, like, you do kind of wear...
I am kind of Motley.
You wear a Motley.
I'm a little Motley.
The Motley crew of one.
Yeah.
Well, what facts do you have this week?
Oh, so many good ones.
I'm sure you have good ones. That's what I was saying at the beginning, because they were party animals for a long time there.
Yeah. They had a close call involving fire.
This is taking me back to the BB King episode, where he almost blew up 6 times. What close call did they have involving fire? Was it a fire that was intentional, that got out of hand, or a fire that was accidental?
I mean, yeah, I think you could say it was intentional, yeah.
What was on fire?
Their apartment.
Their apartment was on fire and it was intentional?
Well, the apartment being on fire was unintentional, but the fire itself was intentional.
Okay, what did they intend to have on fire?
Roaches.
Whoa! Individually or like a nest somewhere? They lit individual roaches on fire?
Yeah, so all right, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah, please, unpack this.
This takes place on the band's filthy Sunset Strip apartment.
Okay. Yeah.
This was pre-commercial success, so the group couldn't even afford pesticide, and thus resorted to using hairspray and lighters to exterminate the roaches.
Oh, I have too much experience with hairspray and lighters. I lit a rock on fire once with spray on sunscreen and a lighter.
Whoa.
The same thing, I know. Yeah, I know. It's dangerous. It's not good.
They were pretty good at it, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to claim?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay. Please, how good were they that they burnt down their apartment?
Well, they didn't burn down the apartment. They just almost burnt down the apartment. Yeah, they almost burnt up the apartment. They managed to get it under control. Uh-huh. And not, like, burned down to the ground.
So they're shooting fireballs at cockroaches?
Yeah, and it was all going well, you know, until...
How well? How well could that possibly have been going?
Yeah, I mean, well enough that they kept doing it.
This is the first time they've done it? Like a one-time thing? Or do they just do this all the time and get too comfortable?
No, they were doing it all the time, and they did get a little too comfortable, but it wasn't like they accidentally lit the walls on fire, the drapes, or the carpet or something.
No.
There's one other fun detail that I think will help click some things in place for maybe how this went poorly.
Okay.
The roach infestation was so bad that if they were going to use the oven, they'd have to crank up the heat for 10 minutes in order to kill any roaches that were inside first.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I hate it.
Yeah.
Oh. So how's that helping things click into place? Do they just have the oven on and are they spraying their own hair when things catch on fire? What's the deal?
I wanted to deviate us towards the oven because this was a gas-powered stovetop.
Sure.
Things went a little whoosh and a little flame.
What does that mean? Things went whoosh and flame.
It means they were, like, turned on the oven.
Yeah.
Had the gas top going.
Apparently, sure.
Somebody was going around killing roaches with hairspray and got the hairspray a little too close to the gas and the flames. And, whoosh, big ol' whoosh.
Oh, gosh.
I'm trying to put this delicately.
Right.
They basically almost blew up their oven, from what it seems like.
Yeah. So almost. I mean, did it do any damage?
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. It did a ton of damage. Safe to say they probably didn't get their security deposit back.
Well, safe to say they probably wouldn't have anyway if it's full of roaches.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lose-lose, so you might as well...
It was good enough they continued to live in the apartment for another 2 years before...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe it. I think this is true.
thinks this is true.
I mean, it sounds awful. It sounds just the worst.
Yeah. Ugh.
It seems like hairspray is definitely a thing they would have on hand. And, you know, it seems like before they made it big, sharing an apartment would be a good way to live.
Sure.
You know, save money. And if you get in a cheap apartment, maybe you run the risk of bugs. It all kind of adds up in my head. And they don't seem like the most safety conscious people at that point in their lives. I'm going to say this is a fact.
Cool. Only other piece of information I have that has no bearing on the fact whatsoever is that Vince Neil called the place a cesspool of depravity, where they would host wild parties and attendants would flood in through any open door or window.
Were the attendants cockroaches?
Yeah, some of them must have been.
Yeah, really.
But anyway, this is a spin.
Oh, man. Oh, that was all that gross for nothing?
Oh, not for nothing. For me to get a point.
Okay. Yeah.
But also, the roaches were absolutely real. And they absolutely used hairspray and lighters to exterminate them. But they were very good at it and did not light the apartment on fire.
I can't even imagine. I would never make a hairspray fireball within like 5 yards of my entire building. They just did it inside?
They were just doing it in the living room. Just
okay. I wonder how many roaches they killed.
Can you do me a favor? Can I get the podcast recorder to please read back the name of my first fact?
You said they had a close call involving fire.
Great. Our second one, they had a close call involving fire. Just want to make sure I said it the same way.
Uh-oh. Is that going to be a running thing? I guess we'll find out. Well, I already know the first one wasn't true. What's the second close call involving fire?
They set fire to a hotel room.
Full of cockroaches?
Probably not.
How'd they do this? Was it an accident or was it intentional?
Yeah, I would say the fire was unintentional.
Okay. What started it then?
A flare gun.
Well, I mean, you got to keep the safety on. What? Why do they have a flare gun in a hotel room? Or does the flare gun get shot into their hotel room?
Because they bought one? No, they were in the hotel room in a Swiss hotel while on tour in Switzerland.
That is a good time to be in a Swiss hotel. Yeah. So they bought a flare gun?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, why not?
Well, I think you're presenting a pretty obvious reason why not. If they set the hotel room on fire.
I mean, to buy a flare gun. No reason why not to do it. Now, firing it inside your hotel room could give you several why nots, but...
So they didn't mean for the fire to happen. Did they mean to shoot the gun?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, gosh. What was the target? What did they hope to accomplish?
I don't know. Just fire the flare gun.
Signaling for room service? Yeah. Just wanted to see it work? I don't know. Now, did this one cause any damage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They set fire to the hotel bed.
Yeah.
Which then spread to the rest of the room and caused like severe smoke damage to the entire floor of the hotel.
I'd imagine. I bet Switzerland was not very happy. Just generally, all of Switzerland.
Yeah, probably.
Everyone made it out okay?
Yeah, the whole building was evacuated. Nothing was... The fire department was called. No big deal. Other than, you know, all the damage.
Kind of a big deal. How much did they pay for that?
I have no idea.
Thank goodness. I was going to have to play guess that dollar amount, and I didn't want to do that.
There's one more question I'm kind of hoping you ask.
Okay. I guess when did this happen?
Oh, well, in 1986.
1986. Cool. Is it another obvious question?
Yeah. What happened to the flare gun?
Oh, I thought about that, but I just assumed they either left it or took it. The end.
Yeah, they took it.
Well,
and proceeded to get it confiscated by the Swiss police when they were found in an alley firing it off at trash cans.
Oh, they just left and shot it more. Did they ever get it back?
Probably not, but I don't
maybe.
Know.
I am conflicted now because the last fact was very similar to this in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And it wasn't true. And this one seems true, but you could also just put it in here as another spin because the first one was so spun that you think, I'll think this one's true.
Sure could have. Does it have any bearing on your answer if I tell you? You have one more fire-related fact coming up, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you do tend to do fire-related facts or similar facts in batches of 3 to 4 sometimes. I don't know. Destroying a hotel room is just such a metal band cliche.
Sure is.
But it's a cliche for a reason.
Oh, one other detail that has no bearing on the fact about the fire. It says that they also apparently smashed all the glass windows in the hotel's elevators.
I'm gonna say it's a fact this time.
It's a fact this time.
It may be. Just another spin. But boy, that'd be really sad.
Well, I thought you were going to be like, it may be, and leave it there. You'd be like, yeah, it may be. That's why you said fact.
Yes.
May just be another spin. And it is. This is another spin.
I didn't think you'd go 2 in a row. I'll be honest. I thought you might throw a real one in there.
Another spin that is based in a lot of truth. Absolutely. Purchased a flare gun, fired it inside the hotel room. lit the bed on fire, but they quickly put it out and no one was the wiser.
Ah, but you're not calling that.
Did not get arrested, going and firing in the alley, did not have to evacuate the whole building. None of that was true.
But they did have a close call involving fire this time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they did with the roaches as well. I mean.
No, they were controlled with that. That was safe-ish.
Yeah, well.
Not safe, but controlled.
I think it was probably several close calls with that hairspray.
Yeah. That one wasn't a close call. This one clearly was a close call with fire.
The devil's in the details.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, don't worry. I'll give you another chance. They had a close call involving fire.
Who could have seen this coming? What's the third close call? Or maybe the first?
They wanted to put out a fire, but realized they couldn't.
Uh-oh. A fire they started?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Man, I didn't realize they were, like, so fire-heavy. Good grief. What have they lit on fire that they want to undo?
Just a, like, fire, like a bonfire in their backyard of stuff.
A bonfire of stuff in their backyard.
Burning crap. It says here, old furniture.
Sure. Presumably controlled, safe. Something they wanted to do. Well, however, they can't put it out. Why can't they put it out?
Started controlled and safe.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like it got too big for them to handle. Is that what happened?
Oh, it absolutely did. Yeah.
How big?
I don't know.
Oh, why couldn't they put it out? Why didn't they try?
I found an article that referenced the autobiography of singer Vince Neil, it looks like, who talked about it. So I'm getting a reference of a reference. I've not read the autobiography.
No. It'd be wild if you did that in like a week, though.
Yeah.
Why didn't they try to put it out? Like, what?
Well, they tried. They went for the fire extinguisher.
Fire extinguisher?
Yeah.
You don't have a plan to put out a fire of that size when you make one? You don't have like a bucket of water or a hose?
These guys are firing flare guns inside hotel rooms and making hairspray flamethrowers. Do you really think they had a plan to put out this fire?
No, good point. But at least they had a fire extinguisher nearby. They're learning from their mistakes.
Yeah, I guess.
So what, they just use up the whole fire extinguisher?
They had already previously used it all up.
Oh, good. Great. On other fires, I presume.
I presume as well. It was empty. They're already discharged or whatever.
Sure. And so the fire then just burned out on its own eventually?
Yeah, there's not really any closure to this story. I don't know if they used any water.
It still burns to this day.
Still burning to this day.
One of these has to be true, and this one is way less chaotic than the rest.
Well, this is your last fire-related one. I'll give you that, if that matters to you.
Okay. The other ones were pretty true also, though. That's the thing. Like, they clearly have a history with fire. Several histories with fire. I'm gonna say fact again. I don't know. I feel like I'm being fleeced. I feel like I'm getting bamboozled.
He feels bamboozled.
But they all just sound so true. And the other ones have been very, very, very true.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tiny little things going on. And that's why I think I'm maybe not paying enough attention to the tiny little things.
Mm.
But I do think they made a fire so big they couldn't put it out. Even though they have copious experience putting out fires.
He feels like he's getting bamboozled. And he is. This is a third spin in a row.
Oh my gosh. All three fire facts were spins.
Yeah, and this one's completely made up. Not true in the slightest.
Hey, do you know what they call that part in their chimney?
Don't say it.
It's the Motley Flu.
I knew you were going to say that. Ah!
Well, I have to have some little satisfaction here. That's sad. Three fire spins, and that one was just totally fake.
Yeah. All right, on to our final fact. I've already won this week. This is for the shutout.
Yeah, gross. I hate it.
They had a close call with a fire extinguisher.
Well, I hate this. It still sounds like it's very much about fire.
No fires involved, as promised.
No, okay.
I promise no fires, other than the temper, I guess, the blazing temper of an ex-girlfriend.
Oh, jeez. How does a fire extinguisher factor into the blazing temper of an ex-girlfriend?
This ex-girlfriend, known as Bullwinkle, apparently.
Nice.
Within the group, was one of Tommy Lee's girlfriends. She got mad when things ended poorly and chucked a fire extinguisher through Tommy Lee's apartment window.
Wow, that is a close call. Again, really good that he has a fire extinguisher on hand.
Yeah.
Seems like a super necessary tool for them.
I don't know. The way I interpreted it is they had broken up and she like came by and chucked a fire extinguisher through his window, like into his apartment.
Oh, outside in.
Yeah. So I think that's how he got a fire extinguisher.
Maybe she left it because she was afraid of all the fires he was starting.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe this is like a wake-up call. That's so wild. Was anybody home? Was anything broken or damaged by this other than the window?
Tommy Lee was there, and I don't know if anything else was damaged.
Interesting.
For the shutout, what are we thinking?
I can't believe. Would you do four spins? It's like you sometimes to latch on to a theme that you find in one fact and make the rest of the facts about it if you can.
Mm.
Especially in these heavy metal episodes. Like with Twisted Sister, you did a 1, 2, 3, 4 kind of bit because you found like a 1 and a 4. And you said, oh, I can make 2 and 3.
Sure. So does that mean you're thinking it's a fact that the guy latched onto this and made 3 spins about fire? Or are you saying that because the fire ones were so true, I latched onto that and just turned them into spins?
Oh, that's a good question. I wasn't saying the second thing, but maybe I am thinking that now.
Oh, I put ideas in his head. Uh-oh.
But why a fire extinguisher? Is that just what she had on hand?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Bullwinkle.
You know, I look like Rocky to you. I think this is gonna suck if I'm wrong, but I'm gonna say fact
again,
relentlessly, a fourth time.
He's sticking with it.
I guess
he thinks this is the all fact week.
I wish it would have been nice if it was. Think of how well I would have done.
So you're locking in fact?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna lock in fact.
You didn't sound very sure about that.
I'm not.
Okay, gonna let me get away with lying about 4 fire related facts in a row?
No, I'm not. In fact. Because you didn't lie about 4 fire-related facts in a row, did you?
You're right. You're going to let me get away with lying about 3 fire-related facts and 1 non-fire-related fact in a row?
Oh, well, that's true. Well, you didn't lie about 3 fire-related facts and 1 non-fire-related fact in a row, did you?
Unfortunately, I did not. You got this one right.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I
saved the shutout. Woo. I really thought I was gonna like get you gonna spin on that one just out of the spite of not wanting to let me get away with lying 4 times in a row like that.
I had a close call with facts about fire.
Yeah, you week. Did.
That's what I did. Oh, that did not go great for me. I'm just glad I saved one, got the stopper.
I wish I could find half as many facts about some other artists that I found about Motley Crue. It was a lot.
And yet you only used one of them.
I used, they were all based on true stories. I got 3 out of the 4 were based on true
the
stories.
One,
there was
one
made I
up.
Made up. Sorry, the third one I completely made up. 3 out of the 4 of those were based on real stories that I just turned into spins on a couple times.
Why were they all so fiery?
I don't know.
What's Motley Crue's deal?
I don't know. I feel like they were really hogging up the fun fact pool, leaving some artists to die of thirst.
Hey, you know what, though? One artist's fact is every other artist's potential spin. Not to give you ideas, but for all I know, you could do like 1 spin a week about other artists, and that could be like based on Motley Crue's true stories.
Yeah.
Like for like months, and I'd never know.
I've done that before, you know, where I've said stuff and then been like, this is true about an artist that we've done before. Can you name them?
Yeah.
What band that we've covered before fired Motley Crue as their support act?
A band that fired Motley Crue that we've done before?
Yeah.
Whoa. So we're talking like, what, the 80s?
Yeah.
Man, it was big enough in the 80s. Are we kind of in the same genre? I mean, I would imagine so. Because I could see a band like Metallica involved in this, but they're from later than the 80s, mostly. I don't know.
I need a guess.
How sure are we about the time period?
Yeah, 1983. I know exactly when it was.
1983? Wow, gosh.
Don't question me about my time period. Now my time question mark. You can question that all you want.
Question your time. Question mark. Sure. Good grief. Of bands that we've talked about who were active then that would want or try and like maybe take on Motley Crue as an opener, I kind of feel like Toto would maybe do this and then also fire them.
Toto? Is that your final guess?
I suppose. I don't have many other options, I don't think.
The answer is the Merchandise Kings themselves.
Oh.
Kiss.
Kiss. Kiss, who we talked about helping younger up-and-coming bands on tours and toured with Rush. And you're so right.
Yep. Due to their nonstop partying, business-minded Gene Simmons saw that Motley Crue were a financial liability, so he abruptly fired them halfway through the tour.
Yeah.
Both groups have since made amends and even went on a joint tour in 2012.
Nice. Yeah, it seems like that's plenty of time to bury the hatchet. Well, how about that?
But that's it for this Motley mixtape.
Yeah, for a Motley themed episode, all of your facts were like the same, so that's ironic in its own right. But hey, well, we'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week with more facts and spins, maybe an all fact week.
I don't know about that.
And until then, I leave you with my Crew of One signature call. Yeah,
that is the signature call of the Crew of One. Welcome back, Connor.
It's good to be back,
isn't it? Though
I actually left that time.
Oh wow, you don't usually do that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the album cover of Dr. Feelgood.
Let's.
And then we'll talk about the songs of Dr. Feelgood. And then we'll just feel good.
I don't know about that last part.
Sure we will. Give it time. You gotta wait and see. The album cover of Dr. Feelgood, It's a caduceus, but it's like made out of a sword with a real snake on it. It kind of resembles, you know, the typical like Hermes caduceus, like a doctor's symbol.
Sure.
But it's kind of got more of like an Avenged Sevenfold Batwing vibe going on.
Heck yeah.
A hairy skull at the top of it. And green, I mean, it's probably meant to resemble like a doctor's office, but it reminds me of like subway tiles, you know, in the back of it.
I know the kind.
Just a green tiled wall. What do you think? Is this album cover good, bad, otherwise? Hokey?
I think it fits them.
It seems to, yeah. The skulls in their name, and the umlauts in their name being skulls, is a nice touch.
Indeed.
And I also like that the R in Dr. Feelgood kind of makes the pharmacy, you know, the RX. It's a clever addition.
Oh, I didn't even really notice that. I didn't put that together.
Well, surprise. Yeah, it's symbolism, hidden iconography.
Whoa!
Mm-hmm. What do you think the R on the hilt of the sword is?
Stands for Randall. It's the name of the sword.
Randall, the sword.
Yeah.
You know, for all I know, you may be correct.
Probably not.
No, I don't think so. The album's art direction was done by Bob Dufrin, and the cover was illustrated by Don Brodigam. So no R's there either. Maybe it stands for Rotley Crew, like Scooby-Doo would say it. It's a iconic album cover, if nothing else.
Rotley Ruse.
Yeah. Okay, I thought of a fun little game as we go through the tracks on this.
Okay, I like fun games.
I want you to describe each track in one word when we get to it.
Ugh. So much work. I don't want
to. It's so much work to say one word.
You've already thought of all the answers. I gotta sit here and think. I want my word to be good.
It can be just anything. Just anything at all. What the track like?
Just anything.
Yeah, sure. But up first is TNT, short for Terror in Tinseltown, which is a stretch of an abbreviation by all means. Terror in Tinseltown is okay, but changing the word in to N just so your acronym can be TNT, I think is a bit much.
Yeah. I mean, is it really much? It's just dropping one letter.
No, it's true. But how often do you abbreviate in like that?
I mean, some contractions do more than that.
That's true.
My one word for this one, assuming I think this is one word. If not, I'm going to make it one word. Wee woo.
I'll let wee woo be one word. Sure. Yeah. It's an intro track, a little 43-second primer for the record to get you into that headspace. And wee woo is a good word.
It works.
It does. It reminds me a little bit of the beginning of what Kiss did on Destroyer with Detroit Rock City. I literally had Kiss in my notes and didn't even think about them for that tour question.
It reminds me a lot of what Machine Gun Kelly did way too much of.
Really?
His album. You know, it seemed like every other track was like a interlude.
That's true. He did have a lot of interludes. And this interlude, I mean, it's short, but it does represent 10% of the tracks on this album.
Yeah.
But I don't mind.
But like, if you're gonna do something like this, you do a track one as a lead in and it transitions perfectly in the track two.
Yes.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, good. I think it's a nice fit. The opening sample plays a little telephone call paging a doctor, which is obviously a very natural lead into Dr. Feelgood, but that came from the band Queensryche and their record Eyes of a Stranger that came out the year before Dr. Feelgood did. So they're sampling contemporary artists in their music, which is really unique and kind of interesting. But yeah, we rip out of Terror in Tinseltown right away into Dr. Feelgood. Iconic backing guitar here. I think Dr. Feelgood, it's got all the special sauce of what I come to expect and hope for from a Motley Crue song and album.
Obviously, this is one I knew.
Oh, totally. One thing I noticed when I was listening to this album, I mean, I listened to it a couple of times in the lead up to this episode, but sometimes I listen to it quieter, either through speakers or headphones, and then sometimes I was able to listen to it like in my car or someplace where I could turn it up. This album is so much better loud. Go to a volume where you think, that's pretty loud. And then go like one or two higher, and then you'll be like, yup, that's what this album is meant for, I think. Because I don't think this is one of those albums that I could just put on anytime, anywhere. I think this is an album I have to kind of get into the mood for most of it. And just the loudness, I think, helps me get into the mood.
Okay. I had a thought that I don't know if it is accurate, but I could not shake it after I had it.
Okay. What's your thought? Your unshakable thought. Much like the fire that Motley Crue could not extinguish that wasn't real.
This song reminded me of another song.
Uh-oh.
The instrumentals, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then the way the lyrics come in with the fast talking, and just the vocal rhythm and note structure reminded me of another song.
Do I want to know it? Are you going to ruin it for me too?
I don't know. I don't know if it's accurate.
Well, what is it?
I won't ruin it for you.
Oh, come on. You can't lead it up like that. If it's that bad, I'll just bleep it and the audience won't know.
I'm just worried that it's wrong.
You could be wrong. It's fine.
It's more the lead in. The chorus itself doesn't quite. The chorus kind of undercuts a little, but leading up to it, the verses. For some reason, I kept getting Walk This Way stuck in my head.
Oh, yeah. See, that's good. That's a good parallel. I can hear it.
Is it? Okay, you can hear it? Okay, I'm not crazy?
Huh? No, you're not crazy.
The fast talking verses, it leads up to it, just makes me want to, instead of leading in with their chorus, just leading in with Walk This Way.
I think it's the speed of the vocals. That is definitely a big part of it.
It's the speed of the vocals and like the pattern. It's in the same kind of vocal register and it's like the same like bounciness.
Yeah.
Yeah. The chorus kind of undercuts it, but the verses give me real Walk This Way vibes.
Well, I don't even know if the chorus pulls you that far out of it, because Feel Good really kind of pairs well with Walk This Way.
Yeah, you're right. It does.
It's the same kind of style of like big yelling choruses, but I don't think that's gonna ruin it for me. I think this song's gonna
I didn't say it ruined it for me. It was just that
no, I know.
Did I say it ruined it for me? I think I did. But
well, I don't think that association is gonna be permanent in my mind.
Yeah, you were afraid I was gonna ruin it for you. With I just couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake the comparison. Every time I kept thinking of that.
I'll shake it, but I actually kind of love just what this song gets up to. It's a little bit of hair metal revival right when hair metal was kind of on the decline in the popular music world. And it went on to be one of their biggest tracks. I would hesitate to call Dr. Feelgood their biggest.
No, I don't think it is.
I don't even think it's halfway there, but it's got to be among the greats.
I mean, I would say it's like top five.
Pretty close. One thing I got to say, though, is Vince Neil does not look like he sounds like that. I mean, he's got a great voice. It fits the music perfectly. He crushes it. But it's always, 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 always a surprise to me just to picture him singing these tracks. I don't know. Have you seen Vince Neil?
Yeah.
Good. Actually, you know what? I think the first time I was ever exposed to Vince Neil as a human was was on an episode of like Celebrity Wife Swap.
Oh.
And he swapped partners with this like Nashville songwriter, like a la Jason Isbell. It wasn't Jason Isbell, but just in the same vein. And Vince Neil had this girlfriend whose name was like Rainbow or something. And it was just a wild episode to watch. It's the only thing I've ever seen of like a wife swap show. But I remember Vince Neil being there and I was shocked just at the life he lives. Dr. Feelgood. It's all about a doctor who's going to make you feel, well,
good.
Good. But it's not a real doctor. Don't be fooled. Little rat-tailed Jimmy distributes drugs to the community. He sells his car for some supplies, and then he goes around Los Angeles just selling drugs.
That make you feel good.
I mean, I guess, but every time the band made an album while they were on drugs and allegedly feeling good, they hated everything, so.
Yeah, but then when they were sober, they hated each other.
Well, you know.
So.
The song's actually inspired by Nikki Sixx's real-life drug dealer, who probably got a little panicky if his name actually was Jimmy.
Yeah, could you imagine if they just name-dropped, like, their drug dealer?
Yeah, I could imagine. Didn't we have a band that credited their drug dealer on their album?
Yeah, I think you're right, that did happen.
Like Fleetwood Mac? Who did that?
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, I just remember talking about it. So, hey, stranger things have happened. But I really love some of the lines in here, too. I mean, aside from how fun and loud and rockin' the music is, he's gonna be your Frankenstein. It's such an interesting line because it kind of acknowledges the harm that he's doing and the rough life that he stepped into, even though he's got it made in the shade, as they say. I love Dr. Feelgood.
It's a good song.
Not the guy, the song.
You don't love Jimmy?
No.
Oh, poor Jimmy.
What's your word for Dr. Feelgood?
Oh, I forgot I had to do that.
I know, I did too for a minute.
Does that have to be a word?
I mean, I guess not. One, it's only one though. Whatever you choose, it's only one. You can make a sound if you want.
Oh, okay. One.
No, I don't think. Maybe we should stick with the word.
One walk. My word is walk.
A walk? What? Because you're relating it to Walk This Way.
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Feelgood is a walk. Walk in the park.
Not in the park. That's three words. Just a walk.
Yeah.
Please.
Up next is another slice of your pie. And boy, if we're not back to that same thing we talked about on AC/DC with a thinly veiled sex metaphor.
What kind of pie you think it is? Because my word is my type of pie I think it is.
Oh, this isn't a pie. It's
my question stands. What kind of pie do you think it is? Because my word is what kind of pie I think it is.
I feel like it's a cherry pie.
Oh, okay. But
that's because in my head I'm relating it to she's my cherry pie, because it's the same kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Another giant hair metal pie sex song.
There's only really one type of pie I really like anyways, and so that's really the first one that came to mind, and that's cream. I like cream pies.
Oh, yeah.
Banana, key lime. The chocolate creams are really good. The strawberry cream pie is really good. I like cream pies.
That's true. Yeah, AC/DC did a lot of sex metaphors that we were critical of, like Shoot to Thrill, where they just replaced the word sex with gun, more or less.
Like gun. They were like, I want to have gun.
Yeah.
Have gun with me.
Come back to my place.
You're so gunny.
Yeah, right. Do you think Motley Crue's set to do better or worse than AC/DC with Order Me Up Another Slice of Your Pie?
I think they did better.
Do you really? I don't know. It's a close race.
Maybe it's, I really like the hook, the way they do the hook of Order Me Up Another Slice of Your Pie.
Yeah, I do think at least they have one or two lines that point back to the metaphor in Shoot to Thrill. I just don't think this one does. I mean, AC/DC's like, pull the trigger, you know, whatever. This one is just like, oh, wow, you're so sexy, guaranteed to satisfy, undress me, give me pie.
Yeah, I think it's okay, though, because I feel like the issue was, like, here, they're being 100% upfront what they're doing.
That's true.
They just couldn't say, have sex with me.
Gun me.
As the line, right? They had to come up with some good way to say it.
Yeah.
I felt like, Shoot the Thrill, they were trying to walk the line of being clever with a metaphor, but also not wanting to put in the effort of being clever with the metaphor.
No, that's true.
Like, these guys are just like, I'm going to write a sex song and just replace the one line with a clever little euphemism.
That's true. This is less metaphor and more euphemism.
Yeah. So I feel like it's different. You can't really compare the two in that same way.
True. Very true. Well, lyrics aside, the groove of this song is strong. It makes you want to bob your head. It's got a great pulse to it. It just has such a pull in its construction that I really like. This kind of has a blues rock vibe to it too. I mean, to compare the first song to Aerosmith, this one also echoes a lot of what we heard on Permanent Vacation, especially in that intro. I think this is also an interesting format for the song because it doesn't have a chorus so much as it has a refrain. It just has that one line that kind of repeats. We don't really get a proper chorus. Did you recognize the end of Slice of Your Pie at all? It sound familiar?
No.
It should have. The end of the song is inspired by, and in fact, pretty much a straight-up copy of, I Want You, She's So Heavy, from The Beatles' Abbey Road, episode 100.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and it's darn near as long as the ending of that, too. What do you think about the length? Slice of Your Pie is 4.5 minutes. I don't think it needs to be. It feels a little weighed down.
I didn't mind it.
I don't mind the length on, like, Dr. Feelgood, or Kickstart My Heart, or Without You, or any of the other songs that probably deserve to be 4.5 minutes, but Slice of Your Pie feels like it drags a little bit for me.
Fair enough.
Because by 2 minutes and 45 seconds, we already are in that outro phase, and it just drags on for the last minute and a half.
Yeah, you're right. In the last minute, overstays its welcome a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it does on the Beatles, which is maybe hypocritical of me, but probably to be expected. But that's it.
So what would you like to drink to help wash down that slice of cherry pie you got?
Water would be great.
Sorry, fresh out. All I got left is this rattlesnake shake.
Fresh out of water. Okay. Rattlesnake shake. Yeah, it's not about a milkshake. No, that is for sure. My question is, you know, is it just a heavy metal thing for, like, metaphorical sex songs to be so two-dimensional?
Yeah, I think these kind of bands want to just write songs about sex, but they're not allowed to. And so they say, we're going to get as close as possible.
I mean, how much closer can you get when your song starts with the lyric, she's a sex machine? That's it. I mean, it seems like they just turn it off to turn it off. Of course, Rattlesnake Shake is a little bit more explicit than just saying sex machine. To translate that to the actual thing is a little bit harder to sing about tastefully. I don't know. But I'll give you a hint here. There is no rattlesnake.
Whoa. You're right. It's a dance move, right? She's dancing.
Is that, yeah, she?
The rattlesnake shake. It's a dance move.
It's a dance. Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a dance. But wow, what a stylistic departure for this album. It kind of keeps the core of the Motley Crue sound alive while we kind of change into this faster song. There are horns. It's like an old-timey jukebox hit kind of beefed up for contemporary metal. And I love that. That's one of my favorite things about the song is just how different it kind of is. It's just interesting to me how much work they can accomplish with a single guitar lead line. It doesn't feel possible. It's wild. The sound is so full and there are so few notes, but that dun, 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 like that carries so much weight. That is what holds the song on its shoulders.
Again, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a fan of this music style, at least with Motley Crue. I didn't get too hung up on the... It seems like you really dove into the lyrics. Are getting really hung up on them.
Well,
I really just was lost in the music.
It's obviously it's a third of my total score. But the music is its own thing. I love the music. It's so fun and so unique, so energetic and powerful. Like, the music is a big part of why I come back to this album. It's the biggest part of why I come back to this album. But it's also the biggest part of my score at the end. So stay tuned.
Fair enough.
But anyway, you know, Rattlesnake Shake is just a lighthearted, fun song. I think it'd be a mistake to take it too seriously and to judge it as anything else. Realistically, it's not out here trying to be a lyrical masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's out here to be a fun song, and it is.
Yeah.
Up next, though, is the song we kind of already talked about its origin story, Kickstart My Heart. I think this was pretty close to my Motley Crue entry point. This or Same Old Situation. Kickstart My Heart was the album's second single and, you know, just as a refresher, is based on Nikki Sixx's actual death experience. Not even near death. He just died.
Heck yeah.
After an overdose, and they kickstarted his heart quite literally back to life. And that context just makes this song 1,000 times cooler, just to know that it really happened and it's like so literal to him. So he takes that actual hook, that real event, and transforms it from being about actual death and shots of adrenaline into this song about ways he's trying to chase a high and kickstart his own heart without drugs, right? Fast bikes and girls and electric stage shows with the band, anything that gets his heart rate up and gets him going. It is such a positive change. Lyrically, it's close to one of my favorite songs on the album, actually.
Oh, okay. So here's one you like the lyrics.
I definitely do.
And then again, this is another one that I feel like a lot of people know, right? You gotta know this one.
You gotta. It's required.
Especially that chorus. Even if you don't recognize the verse, like when you hit that chorus, whoa, yeah. Like, who doesn't know that?
I know, right? Everyone should know that. Yeah, I think if you're anywhere near glam metal, hair metal, heavy metal, you know, anything, any kind of music, this is almost like required listening. I love the intro. I love how they make that guitar imitate the rev of an engine. And what a snare drum. I think every instrument fires on all cylinders during this song. And it's so cool. Also, what was your word for Rattlesnake Shake?
Oh, dance.
Dance. Nice. What about Kickstart My Heart?
I want to use Wee Woo again, but...
well, I mean, you can reuse them if you want.
No. I think I'll go with Skateboard.
Skateboard?
Yeah.
Like a kickflip? Yeah. So I kickflip my heart?
Well, because that's where my brain went when I read Kickstart My Heart. I went to kickflip for some reason.
Kickflip my heart. Good grief. We're past the halfway point of the album now, and moving on to Without You, a power ballad. I think hair metal power ballads are the most powerful of power ballads.
They're pretty powerful. They're up there.
I don't know if it gets much more...
I mean, well, come on. You got your Celine Dion.
Yeah, but some of those are just ballads. Like, this is power ballads.
Yeah, no. Celine Dion's got some power ballads, and so does... Michael Bolton's got some, like, power ballads.
No, those are powerful ballads, but they're not really power ballads.
No, they're absolutely... What makes it a power ballad?
The power ballad is the instruments, the guitar, the distortion, the thing that you go to a show, like an arena. It says,
a power ballad is a type of popular music that combines sentimental themes with rousing music. It's not exclusive to the rock genre.
No, I think it's got to be rocky.
No, absolutely not.
Especially like 80s rock. Yeah.
As the ballad guy.
If you ask someone to name a power ballad, they're not going to name Michael Bolton. They're going to name Journey. They're going to name...
Oh, yeah. Well, you got Open Arms by Journey. Sure. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
That's like one of the best ones.
They're going to go for the 80s rock.
There's a lot of 80s rock. I'm not saying 80s rock doesn't have a ton of them, but it's not exclusive to rock.
Well, either way, Without You is unquestionably in the category. Either way, it fits. The hair metal power ballad. Without you, I'd slowly wilt and die. Life would be sad. Things would be so different and gray and bad. What a song. You know, they do say without you like 30 times.
Yeah.
It gets the distinct privilege of starting every single verse and portion of a verse.
Yeah, it just says that a power ballad is characterized by a musical formula based on constant escalation and an expressive formula that combines euphoric uplift with romantic yearning. So while I feel like that lends itself to rock music more than some other genres, it's not exclusive to rock. I think you could categorize several Celine... I mean, literally here under Explore Power Ballads, here's Celine Dion and Michael Bolton both pop up under Google suggested power ballad exploration. So, but yes, the most of it is Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Whitesnake's hair metal is literally on here as a thing to explore. But
yep. As a power ballad enjoyer, what's Without You like for you? Where's it rank amongst power ballads?
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, you loved it, loved
it. Yeah.
Is it another one you knew beforehand?
Oh, yeah.
Totally. I think it's fine. And honestly, I feel like the power ballad in this early middle position on the album, track 4 through 7, roughly, it feels like a prerequisite for a record like this.
Sure.
I feel like it is necessary when you're making a hair metal album. It usually ends up with a power ballad in this position. Shoot. Twisted Sister put The Price at number 6. Bon Jovi put Without Love at track 7.
This must just be the power ballad zone. It's the PB zone.
It is. Yeah, we're in the power ballad zone for sure. Kiss was a little different. Beth comes in at track 8 on Destroyer. But
okay, so maybe the zone is 6 to 8.
Yeah, maybe it is. Either way, it's noticeably there. And you'll almost always find a power ballad at this point in a metal album like this.
That's a spin it guarantee. Almost always find one.
Oh, almost always guaranteed. Yeah. What's your word for Without You?
Darkness.
Dark. Jeez.
I just feel like this is a song to listen to, like, in the dark.
Sure.
Real power ballad, just in the dark, just turned all the way up.
With a lighter.
With a lighter.
Yeah, like I said, it's better loud.
Maybe more of a candle, like a skinny stick candle.
In a cave. Yeah, I like it. Without You is a great ballad. Same Old Situation is up next. Another Motley Crue biggie.
Yeah, SOS, another acronym that's been turned on its head.
Well, it's just a normal acronym, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's just like TNT stood for something different, right? And here SOS stands for something different.
That's true. But at least they don't have to mutilate the first part of a word to get the letter they want for the acronym.
I mean, they still do. They just didn't have to.
No, it's true.
They chose to. The mutilation was for fun, not for purpose.
Right. It's like when NSYNC picked their name based on all the members' last letters, and then when Lance came in and they had to replace someone, they just named him Lanston. Just changed his name so that it would fit. But no, Same Old Situation. Heck yeah. Now, this is a song that I think I heard probably dozens of times throughout my life, and I never once knew what it was about. Just for so long, I did not have any idea. Could not have told you. You know, if you asked me, I would have made a guess, and I would have been wrong about Same Old Situation.
Really?
Yeah. Even though it's absolutely the most plain song in the world. Like, they don't obscure anything. There's no metaphors or euphemisms or tricks or lyrics. I just didn't listen to it. It didn't register what this song was about. The song's about this guy's ex. Her name's Cindy. Used to be Cindy. Now she goes by Sin. And girls will be girls. As he says, she's styling. She's had some epiphanies, some self-discovery. And now she's flirting with her girlfriends, who she eventually goes on to marry. The new fling turns into a wedding. And it seems like it's the same old ball and chain, but they end up together for the long haul. And the narrator gets left in the dust. Could not have told you a single plot point from this song. I know the chorus. That's what I knew.
This is another one that I think people will recognize the anthem chorus. Is that it?
It's definitely anthemic. It's meant to be yelled in a stadium for sure.
Yeah.
And they'll also recognize probably that descending guitar motif. That is iconic. It's instantly recognizable. It's just such a charged song. All Around the World, Girls Will Be Girls is such a good pre-chorus.
No. My word for this one?
Oh, yeah.
Shipwreck.
Shipwreck?
Yeah.
Why?
So that's a good time to need an SOS.
Oh, okay, because SO, you unmutilated the acronym.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, or, you know, maybe I didn't. Maybe I was getting a shipwreck. Oh, same old situation. Stuck in another shipwreck.
Oh, darn. I think this is one of my favorite songs on the album, just in the sound and the vibe and the style of it. One of their best for a reason. And after a nice little reprieve from the cheeky little euphemisms, we get them right back with Sticky Sweet.
We're talking about more pie.
More pie. And you know how this whole time we've been talking about Aerosmith and how they kind of parallel Aerosmith on Dr. Feelgood and Slice Your Pie sounds bluesy?
Yeah.
Our good buddy Steven Tyler contributed some background vocals to Sticky Sweet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was just a coincidence. Aerosmith was in the same city when Motley Crue was recording this, and they called Steven Tyler in for the day. It said, how would you like to be Sticky Sweet? And of course he said yes.
So sticky.
Bum, bum, bum. That is such a catchy little interplay between the vocals and the guitar. I do like that little back and forth part. It's a great guitar lick. And I think it's awesome that it has such a great guitar lick because there are about 10 lyrics in this song cumulatively, and they're all a little bit much.
I like the use of the word lass. It's not a word you see a lot.
No, satisfy this lass. That's true.
In fact, I think I'll make lass my word for this song.
Lass. Nice. You know what's interesting too? I feel like this song is, like you mentioned, it's very much kind of like another Slice Your Pie 2.0. And I just feel like it is. Even the Sticky Sweet title of the song is just straight up lifted from a lyric in Another Slice of Your Pie. It's like they said, the pie thing was really cool. How can we do that again, but make it even less about pie and even more about sex? And they're like, I got it. Let's just take all the pie away from the pie and it'll just be the sticky and the sweet part left. And they're like, that's it. Lightning bolt.
It's like after you've eaten the
a pie and you're just left all sticky and sweet.
Uh-huh. This is, yeah, after the pie.
Post-pie.
Yes. Yeah. I do think Sticky Sweet boasts one of the finest guitar solos on the album, which, for all the great guitar happening throughout all the songs, I don't think we see a lot of proper guitar solos on here, which is surprising. But I do think one of the best moments it gets is on Sticky Sweet, which is great. And then She Goes Down comes up next, and it's another kind of repeat song for me, too. It's like they went, how can we do Rattlesnake Shake again, but make it less about rattlesnakes? Like, I don't know, it just feels like we're rehashing song concepts, but like slowly and like progressively they're getting less and less euphemistic.
You know, honestly, can we give Motley Crue the Lass Award?
The Lass Award?
Yeah, I mean, they used it on the last song, and then on this one they're using Sassy Little Lassie, which is like the female version of Lass. They got...
wait. Lassie is the female version of Lass? What do you think Lass...
I don't know.
They're both the female version of Lass.
But what they, I don't know.
But I see what you're saying, and yeah, definitely Motley Crue should get the Lass Award. I think She Goes Down... It's like beat for beat, literally just a straight up copy of Sticky Sweet. It's a repetitive chorus with a short little phrase. There are easy verses with some random details about this girl he's attracted to, and some light intro story about how they get together. That's really all it is. Just twice in a row, copy paste.
Thank you, next.
Right. I think the difference is that where Sticky Sweet was driven by that great guitar, this one is driven by the chorus and the voices singing that melody. She goes down, like, that's where the power in this one is. Whereas Sticky Sweet gets the guitar part. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Musically, I think it's upbeat and fun as the rest of the album is. But I think this album really has hit its lyrical bottom with this pair of tracks. With Sticky Sweet, She Goes Down back to back. It's tough. They combine for almost an 8-minute stretch of hearing the same two phrases about 36 times. And that just gets to be a little bit much for me. That 8 solid minutes on this 11-track album, it's a little much. What's your word for She Goes Down?
Tough it.
Tough it? Like Little Miss Muffet?
Yeah, because that's the song, and I really wanted that to come back more in the later lyrics. I really wanted them to squeeze in as many Little Miss Muffet references as possible, but we only got the one.
No, they only did the one.
I think I'm dubbing track 10 as my favorite title of a song.
Your favorite title? Don't Go Away Mad.
Just Go Away. It's so funny.
It is clever. It is so clever, and I think absolutely it is one of the better titles on this album. What an idea just to think that way. This song was Motley Crue's 4th consecutive top 40 hit. It peaked at number 19, and actually, what I didn't know is the lyrics allude to one of their previous songs, Too Young to Fall in Love.
Oh.
And most of the inspiration for the song came from a movie that Nikki Sixx watched and loved, and then forgot about. He watched the movie, picked this one line out of it, and then never remembered where it came from. People think the most likely candidate is the 1986 Clint Eastwood movie Heartbreak Ridge, which features the titular line in the dialogue.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Vince Neil actually talked about Don't Go Away, Mad, Just Go Away, and he said absolutely nothing at all about it. His commentary on Don't Go Away, Mad, Don't Go Away is, and I quote, "That's a great song. We've been playing it for years. I love to play guitar and sing that song. It's kind of a feel-good song. When that song comes on, everybody wants to sing along with you. I think I could have told you that quote was about any song on this album." And you would have been like, yeah, that says nothing. It's just so funny. I don't know. What a funny quote. I really like Don't Go Away Mad. First of all, I like the guitar part. I like that it takes a bit of a break from the heavy distortion all the time and kind of just gives us a little bit of space to breathe. But I also really like the lyrics. You know, it's this sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek song telling someone to GTFO. Don't be mad, just get out. It's kind of a ballad adjacent song.
Yeah, it's like a soft ballad.
Yeah.
But not like a soft ballad, like it's a soft song.
No, right, it softly meets the criteria for a ballad. Okay. I like that we get so much exposition before the title comes up in this one. It's not like some of these other songs where, you know, they just throw the title at you right away. We get a little bit of time to fully get into the emotion and the idea of the song before we get any closure or final direction for where our emotions are supposed to be. And that's all right. That's okay.
Word for this one? Connorable.
Connorable.
Yeah.
Interesting. What an evocative word.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I don't know, you know, completely unrelated thought.
Oh, yeah.
I don't get my full picks this week, do I?
You don't.
I only get my top 3, no honorable mention. Yeah.
Yep. You do not get a honorable mention this week.
Yeah, just a thought I had just right now spontaneously for no reason.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, up last for me and up Oh, 11th out of 16 for Connor. It's time for change.
I like the intro to this one.
Isn't it different? Yeah. This actually, the intro to this one always reminds me of Kiss's Great Expectations.
Yes.
Kind of fills that very particular place on this glam metal album.
Yes, I actually thought that too.
It's that piano. The way the piano is like so plunky.
Yeah, it's absolutely the piano.
100%. Time for a change. You know, kids have lost faith in the world. There are wars in the streets, and we have to do something about it. I think this is such a weird, frankly, bizarre thematic choice at the end of this album. The reason I had you do one-word summaries for every song.
Well, do you want my word for this one before you tell me?
Well, I guess, sure. What's your word for Time for a Change? Is your word
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, my word's but with like four or five H's.
Okay. Why?
Because I don't know how to feel about this one.
Yeah. Well, what I'm trying to get at here is it's such a weird thematic choice. I did the same thing where I summed up each of these songs in a word to just like get to the core theme of each song. And here's how the album progresses, okay? Just and how out of place this song is. We start with intro, then drugs, sex, sex, party, love, girls, sex, sex, breakup, revolution. Like, this comes out of nowhere. Like, we are the future. Be the change. Make the world a beautiful place. It's such a strong-armed thematic departure, and it is jarring. They say time for a change, and then the whole attitude of the song changes from anything on this album. Like, it's so out of place, and it doesn't belong in the lineup of what these songs are.
I mean, maybe you just weren't imaginative enough with your words.
I mean, I don't know if they were imaginative enough with their words.
You used the same word like five times. I mean,
that's because all these songs are about the same things, except...
I didn't even reuse a word once.
No, but your words were wee-woo, walk, cream, dance, skateboard, darkness, shipwreck, last, tuffet, honorable, and
To be fair, my kind of goes with your point.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. Honestly, the one word thing did prove my point in a roundabout way. Because you don't know what to think of this song either.
Yeah, I couldn't decide if it was how I wanted the album to end. I mean, I guess the album didn't end for me.
I want the album to end with Don't Go Away, Mad, Just Go Away. Yeah, the perfect ending right there.
Yeah.
We were all going away.
I felt like this one was just in the wrong place. I don't think it was out of place on the album necessarily, just it didn't belong last.
No.
I think it could have gone somewhere else in the lineup.
It could have. Put it in the power ballad section.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fine. It is what it is. But hey, that brings us into Final Spin.
Whoa, we're here already.
Sure are. I know you feel like it's a little soon. You still have five more tracks you want to talk about. But yep, we're here already. My scores, again, are very categorical for this album. I think this album does some things really, really, really well. And some things, not so much. Music is one thing that it's kind of in the middle about. I think it's got a lot of good hooks. And I think some of the verses are good. Some of them are okay. I'm giving music a 77. Kind of doesn't do anything unexpected musically, but it's not bad. It's inoffensive. Lyrically, I'm giving it a 75. I think you have actually significantly shifted my paradigm in how I'm going to think about these songs. They're not really full-fledged metaphors like AC/DC Shoot to Thrill. They're euphemisms.
Yeah.
They're not setting out to write a song about a metaphor. They're setting out to write a song about sex and just cleverly saying it.
Yeah.
Which is, it definitely leaves me with a better feeling after that.
I'm glad I actually had an influence on you. Usually I just come in here, ramble off nonsense, and then we go about our day.
You have a ton of influence on me. There's tons of stuff that this podcast is influenced, but that's one of them. So I'm giving lyrics a 75. I think this album's strongest component is the instruments in the production. This album is crisp, it's clean, the instruments are phenomenal. They keep you grooving, they keep it going, the distortion is excellent, the drums are fantastic, and they complement the melodies in such really nice ways. 87 on instruments in production. And the overall vibe, I'm giving an 86. It's not an album I come back to often, but it's an album that I come back to, and it's like, when I'm in the mood for it, it's exactly what I need, you know? Really scratches that itch very well. That gives it an overall score of 80.2, which I swear I did not plan this when I put the episodes back to back, but it is immediately below Wiz Khalifa.
Wow.
From the last album we did. Yeah, Rolling Papers. I just put it back to back. Wiz got an 80 for music, which was a little higher. 82 for lyrics, which was a little higher. He got a 75 for instruments and production, which was lower. And a 76 for vibe, which was also lower. So he got an 80.3. Dr. Feelgood got an 80.2. So there you have it. Number 516.
Wow.
Yeah, 516 feels a little unjustly low.
It does. I was a little shocked at how low that was. But I also forgot how low you put Wiz Khalifa after I gave it a 9.
It's true. true. I know, what a shock. Maybe this will be the same. Maybe you'll give this one a 9.2. I don't know, but we'll see momentarily. I just don't think the score reflects how much I enjoy it. It's a low sounding score, but it's a fun album.
It's just interesting because usually I rate it lower than you unless I bring it, I feel like.
Usually I think that's true. Although, I mean, we have had some overlap.
Yeah, or we're like relatively close.
Yeah.
Not often mine are significantly higher than yours. And I think Wiz Khalifa was, and I think this one's going to be.
Really?
Yeah. My top three in album order, Dr. Feelgood.
Yep.
Kickstart My Heart.
Okay.
And Without You.
Nothing you didn't already know before this album.
Mm-mm. I mean, I already knew half the album, so.
That's true. But nothing that this album had to offer that was new was as good as what you already knew.
Maybe if I'd had a honorable mention. No way to know.
There's no way to know.
My score. I'm giving this one 8 Close Calls with Fire out of 10.
8? I see.
Which, again, you gave it like an 80-something overall, so the score sounds similar, but way different spot on the ranking list.
It's such a different spot on the ranking list, yeah.
And it's going right at the position above Punisher.
Really? Ooh, interesting. That's an interesting ranking, because that puts it right below Harry's House.
Uh-huh.
And Punisher is such a different album than this.
Uh-huh.
I think everything about this album, Punisher does pretty much the exact opposite.
Uh-huh. It's mainly the instruments and the music doing it for me.
Yeah. You think you could be a hair metal guy? Bon Jovi got pretty high.
Let's say is Bon Jovi considered hair metal?
I mean, not really. More of a glam metal type for Bon Jovi, but...
I think I'm a glam metal guy, but hair metal can bleed into that world sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Kiss landed in your 8. Twisted Sister, though, only got a 6.
See, I'm definitely a rock guy. And in that same scenario, glam metal and glam rock kind of go hand in hand. I'm a glam guy, I think. I mean, if you look, you got Billy Joel, Elton John, Barry Manilow, Dua Lipa.
True. True enough.
I think I got a lot of glam going on. Miley Cyrus. But yeah, so that's me. As for playlist picks, I mean, I think I got to take Without You, the power ballad. I'm the ballad guy.
That's true. Well, if you take Without You, oh man, that makes my decision hard.
What are you torn between?
I don't know. Should I take a title track? Should I take Dr. Feelgood or should I take Kickstart My Heart? Or should I take a deeper cut? It's such a hard decision.
I think Dr. Feelgood or Kickstart My Heart would make great playlist tracks.
Whoa. Yeah. Kickstart My Heart. Hope it never stops. That's what we'll do.
All right. Especially because you found out that fun trivia tidbit.
That's true. I mean, doing this episode has fully enhanced my perception of Kickstart My Heart as a song. So, yeah, I think we'll stick with that. Well, cool. That's going to do it for another episode of Spin It. Stay tuned next week for another album and another artist.
Heck yeah.
You know the drill by now. If you were so inclined, tell a friend who's had some close calls with fire about this podcast. Be sure to like, rate, follow, subscribe, do all the fun things. It really helps. Super helpful to us. And we really appreciate it a lot. And if you have fan factor spin submissions, don't forget you can send those our way. Or you could talk to the mixtaper about helping out with fact finding.
Yeah. Reach out to him on X or reach out to him on our Instagram or whatever. He has his own X.
He does. Do you remember what it is?
@_mixtaper.
That's what it is. That's right. We also are on X @SpinItPod and on Instagram @SpinItPodOfficial and on the web at www.spinitpod.com where you can find this episode, all the episodes, and plenty of bonus content. All the Spin It your little spinning heart desires.
Yeah, but until then,
don't go away mad. Just go away and keep spinning.
Keep spinning.
How do you feel about umlauts? Just in general.
Big fan.
Big fan?
Don't understand them, but big fan. I can be a big fan of something I don't understand.
Yeah, that's true.
Like Jell-O.
If you're going to put umlauts, what word would be most enhanced with the addition of umlauts?
I think my name. I got two good spots for it.
You do. Both O's. And then they both look like little surprised faces.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd make that sound you just made. Oh, that's exactly what they'd look like.
All right, I'm going to go practice my hairspray flamethrower technique.
That sounds a little dangerous.
Wee-woo.